Hello everyone, my name is Magdalena and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to thank Teresa for asking me to speak 2 years ago. I was at the Al-Anon convention, international convention, so I had to decline last year, but it's so great that she invited me to be here this year, and I'm just grateful to be here. And I want to thank Angelica. Great job, Angelica. Great job. Now, she picked us up from the airport yesterday, and then she told me that she was looking for somebody to replace her. And I said, why? You know, Al-Anon says that if we don't face our fears, we'll never overcome them. So you'll be great, and it'll be easier next time. And so I'm glad she did. It's great to see old friends like Bill, Deb. Meet new friends, my good friend Lee over there, who's going to give me a sign. My gosh, 2 weeks ago I spoke somewhere and I went over 15 minutes. I beat myself up for 2 days. It was so bad. They were, you know, the people that asked me to share, you know, I think they were a little upset, but I was even more upset with me. Because that's how we are. We beat ourselves more than anybody. So he's going to give me a sign this time. Okay, what it was like, what happened, and how it is today. I am from Mexico, from Ensenada, Baja California. It's a drinking town. Everybody drinks. Everybody gets high. It's pretty normal. You know, I didn't know that was a problem. You know, when I, the first alcoholic that I met is my father. He's still drinking until this day. I think he's about 77 years old, and I went to see him about a month ago, and he was drunk. You know, so if nothing changes, nothing changes. He continues to be in that lifestyle, and that's okay. That's where he needs to be. My parents met when they were about 15, 16 years old. I am the oldest daughter of six. We're six girls. I am the oldest. My father always wanted to have a boy, and I was born. So he named me after his father. His name was Magdaleno, so they just changed the O to an A, you know. And so I remember. Nobody ever talked about my grandfather, and I asked my mom, Mom, how come nobody ever talks about my grandfather? And she said, well, because he was crazy. And I asked her, well, what was wrong with him? And she said, well, he drank too much. And then, so the story goes that they didn't know what to do with my grandfather back in those days in Mexico. I guess he must have been violent, I don't know, but they built a box in the backyard, and they threw my grandfather in there. Yeah. And they had a little door like this, you know, and they fed him through that little door, you know, until he died, you know. That was a cure for alcoholism in Mexico back in those days. You know, it's against the law, ladies. Don't get that. Any idea? And so my father was his only friend, and so my father started drinking with his father when he was about 8 years old. So when they met, my father was already an alcoholic or a problem drinking. My father is about 5'4", 5'5", big belly, big head, really ugly. And then my mom is 5'11", like I am, you know, light complexion. She's beautiful. And I thought, you know, what is she doing with this ugly guy? He's so ugly. But she just kept having kids, you know. And I asked my mom, you know, why don't you just take something, Mom? You know, she said, well, I don't want to go to hell. And back in the days, the Pope, you know, she went to the Catholic Church, and the Pope had said that it wasn't a good idea for women to take birth control because they were going to go to hell. So my mom didn't want to go to hell, but what she didn't know is that she was already in hell living with this ugly guy, you know, who drank every single day. And on top of that, he was always dating other women, and I just couldn't understand because he's so ugly. You know, but you know, later on I learned that alcoholics are good talkers, and So my father's a good talker, so he always had a woman on the side. And so my mom kept having kids, and every time a child was born, my father would say, oh, another prostitute, another prostitute. So I grew up thinking that I was a prostitute. And every morning, I've always been tall and thin, always since I remember. And every morning, my father will tell me in the morning, Larguchona, which is something ugly and long. He will say, Larguchona, get up and go sweep the floor. Or go get me a bottle of tequila. And I remember being a little girl, 6, 7 years old, and going to the liquor store and getting him a big bottle of tequila. And on the way back, I'd be thinking, I can't remember the last time I had milk. And my father is always drinking, and then sometimes he puts soda on his alcohol. And so I remember I would get home and tell my father, I can't remember the last time I had milk, and you're always drinking. All of it is beans and tortillas every single day. So my father used to get very upset and put this little leather belt, and he would just hit me with the belt, just hit me. He was very angry. He was a very angry man. He's still alive. And so I remember putting my skinny little arms up, trying to protect my face so he wouldn't hit me. But then I had belt marks all over myself. And I would go to school like that. And the kids, because I have always been really tall and thin, the kids didn't want to play with me. Most Mexicans are short and a little chubby. They're cute. And here I'm tall and skinny. And so the kids would say, God, look at you. We don't want to play with you. You're strange. And look at you. Your dad beat you up again, and then you smell like beans. I did, because we didn't even have a toothbrush, So anyways, so kids didn't want to play with me. My father told me every single day that I was a prostitute. I was named after this man who was crazy. Then I went to the church where, my name is Mary Magdalene. So I was named after this bad woman. And so anyways, she wasn't a bad woman. She was a great woman that made history, and I am honored to have that name today. Thank you. Then my father will also say, Larguchona, get up and sweep the floor. And I always hated my father. He was just a monster in the home. And so I would look at him and say, why it's a dirt floor? It didn't make sense to me. Why should we use sweep a dirt floor? My father also didn't believe that women should go to school. So in order for me to go to school, I had to sneak out of the house. And so, when I remember going to school, I'd be thinking, am I going to, while I was reading the notebooks, I will be thinking, is there going to be any food tonight? Am I going to get beat up? Do I have to go gather wood so we can have something, for my mom to cook? And so I remember just looking at those letters would just jump, and I just did not learn anything, nothing. I was this tall person that, according to my father, I was a prostitute. I shouldn't go to school. I should be selling food on the streets. And I just was not learning anything. So I stayed back in third grade 3 times. And I was just this walking, dumb woman, according to him. And that's the way I felt. So, but on the other side, thank God for Al-Anon. Thank God that it allows us to see what was good and what was bad. Not everything was bad. I had these wonderful grandparents. My grandparents just loved me. I was their favorite granddaughter, and every time they saw me, they told me, you're our favorite granddaughter. We love you. And so I used to spend a lot of time with my grandparents, and I remember talking with my grandmother, and she was just so wonderful and loving, and she just hugged me, and we used to go, to the store and sing lullabies, and then once she gathered everything that she needed to cook, she will, cook and then make flour tortillas, and then I will put butter on the flour tortillas and just eat those tortillas, and they were so so delicious. And then I would go next room, and there was my grandfather. And my grandfather, I always thought that he was such an intelligent man. You know, my father read a lot. Grandfather, he had a lot of books. And I remember, you know, sitting on his laps, and he would read books to me. And then he would tell me stories of places that he went to. Then he would talk to me in Japanese and Chinese. He told me he traveled all over the world. And I just love my grandfather. You know, but while I was sitting on his laps, I was helping him clean the seats out of the marijuana. And then I will help him. I will help him roll the joints, you know. And so my grandfather would light up a joint, you know, and he would say, "Here, you want to take a hit?" And then I would tell my grandpa, "Oh, no, grandpa, that stinks," you know. So watching my father, you know, falling out drunk, beating us up, and every once in a while he didn't pay the bill at the bar, so he would get beat up and come home. And watching my grandfather never take a shower because I guess he was too lazy because he was high. You know, I've never been drunk high in my life. You know, never been drunk. So, and I think I had been in Al-Anon for about 5 years when, you know, our denial is so thick that I just thought that my grandfather was so smart. But I think that when he was talking to me in Japanese and Chinese, I think he was high, you know. I later learned that marijuana makes people lazy, you know, so I don't think he ever went anywhere. You know, but that's okay. When I started dating, I didn't want anything to do with alcoholics, you know, but if they were addicts, of course they were higher class, you know, there was a lot of love. And so one time my father came home and he told my mom, "You know that I'm seeing somebody else. You know, she's much younger than you. You need to leave and take your 5 kids with you. I don't love you no more." And my mom started looking for work, but who was going to hire her? She was in her middle 20s and had 5 kids. And she had a 6th grade education. And so she started looking for work, and because, you know, nobody will hire her. There's no jobs in Mexico. And somebody offered her a job in the U.S. as a nanny. And my mom said, "Would you stay and take care of your sisters while I go and work in the U.S.? And I said, "Sure, Mom, I will." And I was 15 years old. And that's when I became the mother of my sisters. My mom moved to the U.S. And she started sending a little bit of more money, and we were able to eat better. But what happened was that when my mother was away, I didn't know that alcoholism was a progressive disease. I didn't know my father was sick and getting sicker by the minute. And so when my mom was gone, my father started looking at us like we were women and no longer his daughters. So he started touching my sisters in a way a father should never touch his daughters. And he started spying on me when I was getting undressed. And I wrote to my mom and I said, "Mom, this is going on." And she knew because she had tried to stop him in the past. But she wasn't capable. She just stayed there. And so I wrote to my mom and I said, "This is what's going on." And she said, "Well, if you want to come and live with me in the U.S., you have to come to work and not go to school." And then I said, "Mom, I stayed back in 3rd grade 3 times. You know, I just can't learn." And so I came like most Mexicans do. I jumped the fence and came to work, you know. And I went to work at a chicken farm. And at the chicken farm, there was rows and rows and rows of chickens. And every row, there was a lot of wire boxes, you know. So there was a wire box like this. And there was about 20 chickens in each wire box. And under the wire box, there was the chicken poop. And every time immigration came to take the illegal aliens back to Mexico, you know, some of them will will run up the hill to hide, and some of us will hide in the chicken poop. And I was one of those who hid in the chicken poop. And I remember, you know, when you're sitting in the chicken poop, you know, there's a lot of worms, there's bugs, and they all stick to your skin. You know, the chicken poop also sticks to your skin. And it's really creamy, you know. I don't know if you touch chicken poop, but it's creamy and just sticks to your skin. So I remember sitting there and thinking, please don't find me, because I don't want to go away. I don't want to go to Mexico. I don't want to go back to the monster. You know, I want to stay here with my mom. And so when I didn't hear any noise, I'd just be sitting there. When I didn't hear any noise, I remember thinking, oh, thank God, you know. And I will come out and try to clean myself off and think, you know, I'm nothing. I'm nothing. I don't even exist in this country. You know, I had a lot of acne, and I had no friends, and I was, you know, nothing. I was the reject of this world. And so I asked my mom, I said, Mom, can I go to school? And she said, I have no friends. I don't speak English. I just want to go to school. And she said, well, you can go to school, to night school, but you can't stop working. And I said, sure, Mom, I will do that. So I went to night school, and that's where I saw the most gorgeous guy in the universe. There he was. He was tall, thin, long hair, and I saw him. And when I saw him, I just fell in love with him. And I remember this guy, you know, he was so attractive. And he had a lot of friends. And when he moved, you know, he moved like this, and the whole world moved with him, you know. And then I looked at myself and I said, my gosh, he'll never look at me. And then those old tapes, you know, those old tapes that stay with me. You're stupid, you're too tall, you're too skinny, you're too dark, you know, all those things that my father had told me I became, and I really thought that I was that. And so I looked at him and I said, he'll never look at me. And then, you know, and Alan and I have learned that, you know, step two talks about asking God to return us to sanity. My sponsor said, Magdalena, when an alcoholic is talking about, you know, is talking to another person about how, you know, saying negative things about the person, it's really they're only talking about themselves. Our literature says that. If a person feels good about themselves, they don't tell somebody that they're stupid. You know, they don't tell somebody that they're a prostitute. They don't, you know. So, you know, ask God to return you to sanity. And those tapes, you know, because I started practicing step two, and I trust that God will return me to sanity, those tapes are gone. I no longer think I'm stupid. I know that I'm not a prostitute. And all those things, you know, because I trust that God will take care of me. So anyways, even though I was feeling so bad about myself, in Alan and also says in the One Day at a Time book that anything we let go has our claw marks on it, you know. So it's like, you can't go that far. And so every time this guy went by, he had a lot of friends, and every time he went by, I had one friend now, and I would throw kisses at him, and then push my friend so he would think it was my friend, you know. But he realized it was me. And one day I was at the park with this one friend, and there he was, you know. And my heart started going faster and faster, and he called me over, and after we introduced ourselves, he said, "Would you like to go to a concert tonight?" Then I thought, I wonder what that is. And I said, sure, yeah. And so it was 1975, and Bad Company was playing in San Diego. I didn't know English, you know, I didn't know rock and roll. And so he came in to pick me up, and I got to sit next to him. And he had a little Nova and a big wheel, no, a little wheel. And I got to sit next to him, and I looked in the back seat, and there was a lot of people, because He had a lot of friends, and they were piled up on top of each other. And then I go, and this is before the seatbelt laws, you know. And I looked in the back, and I thought, I wonder how they fit in there, you know. But I didn't think anything of it, and then he put this 8-track player on the stereo, and this loud music came out, and then people started smoking marijuana, and I remember taking a deep breath and thinking, oh, I'm back on my grandfather's lap, you know. I just loved it. I got that sense of security. I was in the hands of an addict. And so, you know, I remember before coming to Al-Anon, I used to blame the alcoholics in my life for the life that I had. But, you know, nobody put me in that car. My father was no longer in the picture. And why did I blame everybody else? You know, I was a volunteer. I stayed in the car. And so I remember they passed a joint, you know, when it came in front of me, and I said, oh, no, thank you. You know, but in my head I thought, I can roll in for you if you need help, you know. I had years of experience by that time, you know, but it was our first date, so I didn't do it, you know. But later on I did, because I couldn't believe they were using this machine, you know, this little rolling machine. It's like, I'm faster. So, we dated for 2 years. During these 2 years, he tried to kill me a couple of times because he was high on acid. And I thought, you know, I remember thinking, this poor guy, his mom left him in the streets of Mexico when he was 8 years old. So he grew up on the streets, and he just needs a little love, you know. But when we get married, I'm just going to love him enough that he's going to stop drinking. You know, he is going to stop. And so I was pregnant, and of course that never happened. I also thought, you know, we're going to live in a nice place in Rancho Bernardo. It's a, you know, higher class neighborhood. I don't know how these thoughts came to my head. But I thought, we're going to live in a nice neighborhood. We're going to play tennis in the weekend. And then we're going to have two nice lowriders park outside, you know. We never had a lowrider. We have never played tennis. And so, anyways, we had a beautiful daughter. And I remember looking at my beautiful daughter. And I was just so in love with my husband. And I was so happy that finally we had this baby. And she looked just like him. You know, we named her Mirabella, which means look at the beauty. And I remember looking at my daughter and thinking, you're part of him and I. You know, you are love. You are loved. And I remember looking at my daughter and thinking, and telling her, making a promise that I was going to take care of her, love her, protect her, and nothing ever was going to happen. Nothing bad was going to happen to her. And I meant it. I really meant it. But see, I didn't know that living with an alcoholic, I had become sick too. And so soon my whole concentration was on what my husband was doing, not doing, and how I could prevent him from doing whatever he was about to do. And I forgot about my daughter by this time. My sisters were already in the U.S., and my sisters had, some of them were married to people that were beating them up. Some of them were drinking and using drugs. Some of them had joined gangs. My mom had a boyfriend now, and she had another daughter. And it was just crazy. Life was out of control. And the one that I loved the most, who was my husband at that time, you know, he was always in jail. He was always getting drunk driving, and he was always with his friends. And I remember looking at him and looking at me and living in that environment and thinking, how dare you think this guy loved you? You know, how dare you? You know, after all, you're those tapes again. And thinking, you know, there's nothing to live for. And I thought, you know, but I'm not going to, because Al-Anons, you know, we don't give up easily. I started cooking for him, not cooking for him, sometimes, you know, waiting for him. And I remember waiting for him while he was out with his friend. We lived in this second story building, and I remember waiting and waiting and waiting for him with a sexy gown. And then I would get so angry by 3-4 in the morning that instead of waiting with a sexy attitude, I would go to the kitchen door, grab a knife, and wait for him, you know. And when he walked in, you know, I just wanted to kill him. You know, I wanted to stab him. And then his friends, because we always lived in neighborhoods where there was a lot of other alcoholics, somehow we kind of stick together, just like we do in Al-Anon and AA, you know. So they, you know, the friends used to live downstairs and around the neighborhood, and while I was trying to kill my husband, the friends will come up and try to rescue him and say, "Magdalena, leave him alone." And I remember with this knife screaming at them, "If you don't leave, I'm going to kill you too." So they're like, "Okay, have him." They would just leave. And so my husband's alcoholism progressed, and where he was now using heroin, and he started shoplifting. I started shoplifting with him because, after all, he needed a supportive wife, you know. And so I just wanted to be with him. I didn't care anything else. And nothing was working. Nothing was working. And so I decided, well, I'm going to have another kid, you know, and this time it's going to be a boy. And I'm going to name him after him. And this time he's going to stop drinking. And I couldn't believe I had the boy. And he continued to drink. And I thought, you know, you think that if you name your child after your loving husband, alcoholic husband, he will stop drinking, right? It makes sense to me. But no, of course that didn't happen. And he continued to drink. And now things were getting worse, and my husband and my grandfather were getting high together. My mom and her new boyfriend were selling heroin to my husband, and there was just no way out. How do you get out of that? How do you get out of that? I knew there was help for alcoholics, but I knew that there was no help for me, because there was no help. I remember as a child going to church and thinking, you know, telling the father, the priest, you know, this is what happened at home, and my father beat me up, so I beat up my sisters. And then the priest would tell me, "Get on your knees and pray." That didn't help. I was angrier. Then I thought, maybe if I go to a counselor, that will help. And then I thought, but people like me don't go to counselors. Because in my mind, people that went to counselors were those people that had boogers coming out of their nose and saliva, you know. And I looked in the mirror, there was a lot of things wrong with me, but there was no liquids coming out of my face, you know. So I didn't belong there either. And one time, I was now driving, and I had these two little kids, and I got in the car, and I just wanted to die because there was no place for me. And I got in the car, and I was driving 100 miles or so an hour, and I was in the freeway, and I knew that, I just knew that if my life continued, I love those kids so much, and I just didn't know how to be a good mother. My kids scream, I beat them. I wasn't a good mother. You know, I had no patience. They cried. I cried with them because I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know other than hit them, because that's what I learned. And I didn't want to do that. And I knew that if I continue, my kids were either, you know, become addicted or alcoholics or something. They will end up in jail. They will become gang members. And there was just nowhere else to go and die, you know, nothing, nowhere else to go. And I got in a car and I put those two kids in the back seat of the car, and I was driving so fast and I just wanted to die. And I said, "God, if you're up there, please help me stop, because I just want to die. There's just nowhere else to go. And I was able to stop. And you know, when we ask God, God listens. It might take him a while, but he listens. He listens. And so during that time, my husband was in jail again. And he went in front of the judge. And the judge said, "Well, you either go to treatment or you go into prison." And he said, "I'll go to treatment." And that's when I was introduced to Alan. And he, you know, I went to the classes and they said, "There is a program for you." And I went to Alan and I went to my first meeting, and I remember sitting there and I still had the false pride. I'm better than you. You know, how could I be better? You know, we had nothing. We had nothing. So I went to the meeting and I was sitting there, and this really nice lady, she said, "Would you like to share?" And because I had that false pride, I thought, you know, I don't think I belong here. I said, I don't have any alcoholics in my life. I said, because I still thought that you know, addicts were higher class than alcoholics. So I said, my husband's a heroin addict. He's not an alcoholic. And this really nice lady, she tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Dear, keep coming back," you know. That time I thought, you know, I'm married to this hard dude who's got tattoos. He's a strong man. My sisters have really nice low riders. They're in power. You know, they're gang members. And, you know, the false pride, they didn't even work. I don't know how they pay for their low riders, you know. So anyways, and so I didn't come back to Al-Anon. And I left for another 6 months. And during this time, we got evicted from our place. And my after treatment, my husband started drinking again. And I told him, you know, I know the problem is. I know the problem. What the problem is. The problem is your friends. If we move back to Mexico, we're going to be okay, and you're going to be away from your friends. At this time, I'm still an illegal immigrant, but I have learned a little bit of English where I can cross the border and say that I was a U.S. citizen. Sometimes they believe me, sometimes they didn't. And so we moved. I convinced him, and we moved to Tijuana. During this, you know, when you live in Mexico, there's no water, there's no green grass for the kids to play. I became vegetarian when I was 11 years old, so my kids were born vegetarian. There was not enough. There was no milk. There was not enough for them to eat. And my alcoholic husband didn't take him there. I took him there. You know, he was just so zoned out that he just wanted me to leave him alone. But then we moved to Tijuana, and then he started drinking and using again. And I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I decided to take karate classes, you know, because he was pretty tall like I am too. So he was getting stronger than me. So I thought, I'm just going to take karate classes. And so instead of waiting for him by the window, I remember I thought I had gained some type of serenity, and I will, you know, lay on the bed. And as soon as he walked into the house, I remember jumping up and going, ah, you know, wanting to cut him in little pieces. And of course that didn't work. You know, he continued to drink. And one day, 6 months had gone by since my first meeting, and I remember driving that car. We had this little car, and I was driving about 140 miles a day to keep my husband away from his friends. Every morning, we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I put my kids in the back of the trunk and drove to the U.S., work, and then go back home. And one day, I was doing the drive back home, and I remember looking at the right side, and there was my husband. And I thought, what can I come up with now? I had run out of ideas. I didn't know what else to do. I just didn't know what to do. And I remember going to my first Al-Anon meeting, and I also remember looking at the kid, at my kids in the back seat of the car, and there was two kids there, just sitting there, like no movement. They had no smile on their faces. You know, they looked like zombies. They were super thin. My daughter's face was right in front of her face, and she was this skinny, skinny kid. The kids didn't, you know, their eyes just looked so sad. And the upholstery of the car had been teared down. And then I thought, how did I get here? What happened? What happened with the promise that I made those kids, that I was going to love them and take care of them? And I just didn't know what else to do. And I remember going to my first Al-Anon meeting, and it was in an Al-Anon club. And that Al-Anon club, they had a lot of posters. You know, they had the steps, traditions, concepts, the slogans. And the only thing that stayed in my head on that day, on my first meeting, was keep coming back and first things first. First things first. And my kids were first at that moment. And on that moment, I made a decision to go back to Al-Anon. And let go of my husband. My husband went to prison, and I went to Al-Anon. And this time I was ready to do anything the program told me to do because my ideas no longer worked. I was powerless. I had no power, you know. And I went to my meeting, my second meeting, and I remember sitting there. There was no Spanish meetings, and I remember sitting in the room, and I didn't know English. And I so much appreciate you, Angelica, being here today, because I know how hard it was walking into that first meeting and knowing that I just could not go back. I wanted to leave. I love my kids. I just didn't know what to do with them. And so I went to that meeting and remember sitting there shaking. I was just shaking. I didn't want to get kicked out. And I just didn't know. And so I heard, yeah, I understood more there than I could speak. And I remember sitting in the room and hearing, get a sponsor, work the steps, do service, read the literature, and keep coming back. And so on my third meeting, I went up to this man and I asked him if he will be my sponsor. And so I asked him because every time somebody shared, Ralph will look at the person and pay attention on what the person was saying. You know, when we live in alcoholic homes, nobody listens to nobody. I remember talking with my husband or my sisters, and they just didn't understand, so I will talk a little louder and louder and louder, and pretty soon everybody was screaming. But when somebody shared, Ralph, look at the person and listen. And so after the meeting, on my third meeting, I went up to Ralph and said, will you be my sponsor? And, you know, when I came to Al-Anon, I had holes on my jeans. I had this great big jacket because I was so scared. I was shaking. I had my hair. My hair was long in my face. And my husband used to cut my hair while he was drunk because we didn't have money for the hairdresser. That's how I came to Al-Anon. And I went up to this man, and I didn't know Ralph was from England. And Ralph has a strong English accent. And here I am from Mexico. I can't speak English. And I went up. But, you know, Ralph has unconditional love that we so much talk about. Ralph's still my sponsor today. I talked to him this morning. Ralph and I have had a relationship of over 30 years because Ralph was willing to help somebody that needed help. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Anon always be there. And Ralph was ready to help me. And so when I asked him, Ralph looked at me and he said, Magdalena, we'll give it a try. And so Ralph and I started getting together at the park, and I remember bringing my kids to the park because I learned in Al-Anon that I could no longer leave my kids with the alcoholic, because my kids were coming home with cigarette burns on their skin. My sisters were taking care of the kids, and I remember that denial, thinking, you know, my sisters are not doing that. You know, they love my kids, and my sisters did love my kids, but their disease was bigger than they were. And my sisters were no longer in the picture. It was the disease. So I started bringing my kids to my meetings with Roth at the park. And I started going to step one, step two, step three, you know, finally got to step four. And I started telling Roth, you know, about those tapes in my head and how ugly I was, and oh my God, all the sickening stuff. And Ralph, because we met at the park, Ralph said, "Well, you know, Magdalena, do you see that bird up there?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "What do you think of that bird?" It was a crow. And I said, "Well, it's beautiful." And Ralph said, "Do you think that bird gets up in the morning and looks in the mirror and says, 'You're too dark, you're too ugly, you know, your feathers are out of place'?" He said, "No, that bird gets up in the morning and goes and does God's will." That's what we do in life, Magdalena. We don't worry about anything. He also said, "Magdalena, if we all look the same, this will be a pretty boring life, don't you think? You know, we are all children of God," he said. "We do not judge the children of God, and that includes you. So you need to stop calling yourself names." And my good friend Bill always reminds me not to call myself stupid. And thank God, you know, for people, loving people that are not afraid to tell us what we're doing wrong. And so I always enjoy exercising, and I remember taking, you know, going for a run, and before Alan, and I remember thinking, "Oh my God, you're so slow. Look at the guy pass you again." But now, because my sponsor told me I couldn't call myself names, I remember somebody passing me and my feelings were getting hurt, you know. And I instead of calling myself bad names, I started singing to myself, "Pretty woman running down the..." So I started standing taller, you know, looking at people on the eye. Ralph told me, "In the eyes of God, Magdalena, we're all the same. We're all equal. Nobody's more than another person. We're all equal. God loves us all the same." And so I trusted Ralph, and I trust the program. And so he said I could do anything. Everything was possible. And so because I knew the Spanish community needed a lot of help, and so I knew my family needed help, and this was the answer to all of our problems. So I started meetings in Spanish, hoping my family will come, but they never came. They still haven't, you know. I also, there was no Alatin meeting, so I started meetings in English and Spanish. I became so involved in service. I love service, you know. I love excitement. Before Alan, and I remember every once in a while I will get deported. You know, I'm illegal, get deported, that's normal. You know, so I remember standing on the fence and I would look on both sides. And if I didn't see any Border Patrol officers, I would run and run and run to the other side. And if I didn't get arrested, I would get disappointed and go back and do it over again, you know. I love excitement. Thank God for service. You know, service keeps me very excited. You know, I just love service. So I didn't know what to do with those kids. And I would go to my meeting and ask my friends, "I don't know what to do with my kids. I know I can't hit them." And my Al-Anon friends will tell me, "Well, Magdalena, what you do with your kids, you know, after you get out from work and you pick them up, say, you take them for a walk, you feed them, you take them for a walk, you help them with their homework, you give them a bath, you put them in bed, you read something to them, and then you go to bed and you read something for you. And in the Just for Today Al-Anon pamphlet, it says that just for today, I will not be a mental loafer. So every day I read something useful. And that's what my husband got out of prison. He came home, and that's what I was doing when he came, you know, he had been home, but he came home and said, if you don't do A, B, and C, I'm going to go out and get drunk. And then I said to him, well, make sure you lock the door on your way out. You know, I had learned. I had learned about detachment without beating him up, you know. Detachment with love. He decided that instead of going to get drunk, he decided to go to an AA meeting, and today he's been sober for 30 years. Carlos and I have been through a journey in life. You know, last week we celebrated 37 years of marriage. I'm just so grateful. Without this program, I wouldn't be with him. Many times, you know, his AA friends just love him. Just love him. And many times I can't stand them. He's not the nicest alcoholic sometimes. And I think, you know, I wonder what alcoholics see on him, because they like him, so he must have something good, you know. But of course, that's when I feel critical and I'm not working a good program, because Al-Anon tells me I need to concentrate on me. Anything that is over my nose is none of my business, you know. Carlos is doing the best he can, and God loves him, you know, I know he does. So anyways, so it was 1990, and the International Convention was gathering together. I mean, it was happening in Seattle, and people from all over the world were coming to Seattle. And I told Carlos, why don't we go to Seattle? Why don't we go to the International? And he said, well, yeah, sure, we can go. Our kids were now involved in Alateen, and they were busy learning about their lives. I remember asking my kids for their help. I said, can you tell me when I'm screaming? Because I can't, you know, I'm used to screaming all the time. So can you tell me if I'm talking out loud? And so the kids had learned so well in Alateen that every time I would be screaming, they would say, Mom, you're screaming. It's like, oh, thank God we help one another. It doesn't matter, you know, what age. So our kids were in Alateen. We got them out of the convention, and we came to Seattle. We fell in love with the city, and after, you know, we went home, we decided to move to Seattle. And what happens when we stop bailing the alcoholic out of jail, there's money, okay? So we were able to buy a nice house, a nice condominium, a nice trailer, a nice boat. Things that we dreamed of, now we had, you know. But we didn't care anything for material things, because the spirituality and the fellowship that we have in the program is the most important thing, and we follow our heart. So what we decided to do, we went home, sold everything, and moved to Seattle and moved into a one-bedroom apartment, because we knew God was in Seattle, just like He's here in Nashville. And so we moved to Seattle, and Carlos used to make elevators. Now he was cleaning elevators at the airport. I left my factory job, and I went to work at a Denny's restaurant. I went to the local intergroup office, and I said, do you have any service for me? Because I know I can't keep it unless I give it away. I need to stay in service. And again, a really nice lady said, keep coming back so we can get to know you better. And I did. I went back. There was this man answering the phones at the local intergroup office. And I said, I'm looking for a home group. And he said, he circled the you know, his name was Ted. He died with 44 years in the program. He circled a rent on Thursday night meeting. And he said, this is the best meeting around here. So I went to that Thursday night meeting. That's my home group. The rent on Thursday night meeting is one of those groups that when Lois and her friend, oh my gosh, what's her name? Ann B. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so when Ann B and Lois sent 100 Al-Anon groups, or Al-Anon family groups, was registering with the Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous said, "We don't want you. You're not an alcoholic. You need to register your own groups." And so Bill came to Lois and said, "Can you start Al-Anon? Can you start a group for families?" And Lois was, I think she was 60-something, and Lois said, "You know, I've been homeless for a long time. I'm enjoying my garden. So I just want to enjoy life today." And he said, "But thank God, you know, that Lois agreed." And her and her friend Ann B got together and sent, I think, about 100 letters to all the registered groups with the AA, to the Al-Anon family groups. And then 87 of those groups responded saying, "Yes, we want to be part of Al-Anon family groups, and we want to adopt the traditions and the steps as part of our AA's traditions and steps as part of our fellowship." And my home group is one of those groups. So on June, we celebrated 63 years in the program. So anyways, I'm very honored. So I started going to that group, and if you're ever in the Seattle area, we meet every Thursday at 7:30, and it's we're about 20 minutes south of Seattle. My daughter got busy with Alateen, and then something happened to her. She started looking different. My daughter was so active in Alateen. She was going to speaking in Alaska, speaking in the local schools, and my husband was in AA, very active, and we were the happy family, and then my daughter started looking different. She started coming home with bruises on her arms, and the beautiful, tall girl that she had become, you know, she started looking sick, and I just could not understand what was going on with her, because she was active in Alateen. But her sponsors knew, but, you know, we have this great thing about anonymity that none of them told me what was going on. We found out that she was drinking. And I remember when I found out, I got so mad at God. I got so mad, and I screamed at God and say, "How dare you give me an alcoholic daughter after all the service work I have done, you know?" I called Ralph and I said, "My daughter's drinking." And Ralph said, "Well, you know, Magdalena, God loves alcoholics too. And I'm sure he wants your daughter to learn something." And so that's when my daughter's journey began to in and out of treatment. We asked her, "If you need help, you know, you're a daughter. We love you. We'll take you to treatment." And so she went to treatment, came out, started drinking again, and did this several times. I learned in Al-Anon that the more I help an alcoholic, the quicker I help them to kill themselves. And I knew I had done that with my husband, and I wasn't willing to do that with my daughter. So what I learned in Al-Anon, and then my daughter was coming home and telling my son, "If you don't drink with me, you're not a man." So she was not practicing Tradition 1. You know, Tradition 1 talks about unity. She was not part of the unity. And in Al-Anon, I learned that, again, you know, that there is a God, and he's greater than I am. And so my husband and I, we started having problems, because when alcoholism gets in the middle and we allow the disease to separate the family, it's not healthy for anyone. So we had to ask our daughter to leave the house. And I also learned in Al-Anon that if I trust God with my kids, if I trust God with anything, I will trust them with my kids. And I remember in the Al-Anon literature, it also talks in one of our readings that we can put our kids in the hands of God. And so I put my daughter in the hands of God. And in the hands of God, there's blankets, you know, there's food, there's everything she needs. And I knew my daughter was going to be okay. And if my God, my daughter was to die because of this disease, she will be with God. And can she be in better hands than in the hands of God? I don't think so. At least for me, I don't think so. And so we had to ask her to leave. And my daughter became homeless. And every once in a while, she will come home and ask for help. And we will once again take her to treatment. And then, again, same thing. You know what happens with kids that grow up in an alcoholic home, in a home of recovery? They are very smart kids, very smart. They know all the language, they know all of the steps, they know what to use against themselves, unfortunately. And so she was going to the counselor saying, I'm just not drinking today. I'm not drinking one day at a time. You know, God is in charge, and all the beautiful language of love that we have. But she was killing herself. And one day she came home and said, Mom, I need to go to treatment. And I said, no, don't go to treatment. I said, you go to AA, you get a sponsor, work the steps, and you're going to be okay. Because I know AA works. I know it does. And my daughter looked at me, and she had been drinking, and she got really close to me. And she said, Mom, don't you understand I can't stop drinking? And when my daughter talked to me, you know, her breath smells just like my father's breath. The one that I hated so much on my father, my daughter had it. And I said to her, no, I don't understand how the power of that disease of alcoholism in another person. I said, but I knew that AA could. And I said, you know, if you want to go to treatment, I'll take you to treatment. So it was on a November weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, and my husband and I wrapped our daughter in a blanket because she was our baby. She was our baby. And we put her in the back seat of the car because she was so fragile. And we put her in the back seat of the car, and we took her to Spokane, Washington, which is usually 5 hours. It took us 6 or 7. And we took her once again in the hands of God in a treatment program. In that treatment program, they took her to a Native American meeting. The Native American meeting needed a coffee person. She knew all about service. You know, she's been in Alatine. And so she became that coffee person. And today, because the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, she has been sober for 20 years. I'm just so grateful. I am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous that you have given me my family back. I love my daughter. I love my husband. And I have him because of you. I also, we still have a little boy at home, you know, that he went through a lot with my daughter. But, he, you know, after 10 years of Alatine, he said, Mom, I think I'm cured. I'm well, you know. I no longer need Alatine. And I said, that's fine. My daughter, by the way, she got married to the guy of her dreams. He was also sober. Unfortunately, he relapsed. And after 2 years of marriage, they had a beautiful daughter. Solana is her name. And after 2 years, she told him, you know, I love you, but I love my sobriety and my daughter more. And she walked out of the marriage just like that, you know. She didn't take karate classes or ballet, nothing. I don't know how they do it. She's now married and has another. She's got 2 more kids, and she seems to be happy. You know, sometimes she walks and the butterflies follow her. She's so beautiful. And then another time, it's like, my God, who is that woman? But, you know, God is in charge. And our son, he's grew up with, like I said, with the program of the 12 steps. And is that my sign, Lee? Okay, my son, I'll hurry up with this story. When my son was about 15 years old, he had this girlfriend and they adopted a cat. I hate cats. And when they broke up, he gained custody of that cat, so he brought the cat home. And one day I was having an Al-Anon relapse. You know, I was getting into his business. You know, this kid is a wonderful kid. He never misses school. He's just a great kid. And very organized, everything. He does everything well. But this day he had his room was messy. You know, tradition 10 tells us that we don't get in outside issues. His room is an outside issue. I was looking for controversy. And so I went to, you know, I wrote him a nasty note saying, if you don't clean your room, I'm going to throw your cat away. So he wrote another nasty note back saying, Mom, I'm cleaning my room one day at a time. You know, so I'm not all the way done yet. Then he had the audacity to put the triangle with the circle. He put AA Al-Anon, keep coming back, it works. You know? P.S. in Spanish, leave my cat alone, you know. So when he went away to the university, I got stuck taking care of the cat, you know. Today, but I introduced him to the outside world, and he's a happy cat now. He graduated from the university. He's got a great job. He travels all over the world because he enjoys life. Every Wednesday we have dinner together. Family has a dinner together. It's very important for him and for my daughter. And so every Wednesday, he comes home and on Wednesday he dropped us off at the airport, and he's got a Jeep with the top down, and I was sitting in the back seat of the car of the Jeep with all the suitcases, and he was taking us to the airport, and I was just feeling so grateful, so happy, and he said, Mom, I need to go buy a shirt because I'm going to a birthday party, and then I said, whose birthday party? He said, it's America's birthday. So I said, okay, wonderful. You know, because of Ralph, I became a U.S. citizen. Ralph told me, Magdalena, this is an honest program. You need to become legal. And Ralph understood that because he was from England. And so I became a U.S. citizen. I have taught my kids to love this country because it's what has given us what we have today. Ralph told me to go to school. I decided, you know, one day I look at my resume. I had been a waitress, housekeeper, you know, all that stuff, dishwasher. And Ralph told me, you need to go to school. And I decided to go to school. And in 1999, I graduated with a four-year college degree. You know, thank you. Today I work for the state of Washington as a parole officer. You know, I don't know. God is funny. I don't know how we get here. You know? I send people to AA. You know, I also send them to other programs. If they don't go, I have no problem letting them face the consequences of their actions. You know, I take people to jail often. You know. I also, my job can be dangerous sometimes because we go into, you know, we do warrant sweep, we serve warrants. We go into dark rooms with people who are just totally drunk or high. It can be dangerous, you know, people like, somehow alcoholics like it all dark, you know. They don't like the light. And so they have weapons and everything, and so I called Rob and I said, Rob, my job can be dangerous. I pull out all these weapons and everything. I said, I think I need to be armed. And I said, but in order to be armed, I need to pass a psychological evaluation. And I said, but I think I'm kind of crazy. I don't know if I'll pass it. And Rob said, well, Magdalena, if God wants you to have a gun, you will. You know. So today I'm an armed officer. I called Ralph and I said, Ralph, I know, I'm sorry, I called my sisters and I said, guess what? I have a gun. And I kissed my sisters, go, is your husband going to be okay? They don't understand recovery. You know, today I'm still in service. I love service. I love Al-Anon. If I want something, you know, I got to be part of that solution. I became the delegate for the state of Washington. I'm panel 50. And today I am serving as a chair, as a chair officer of my area. Like I said, I love Al-Anon and I love service. I love my friends that they have entrusted me with voting for them for entire state. It's just a great honor, just like it's a great honor to be here today. I'm going to end with this little story. When I was a little girl, I remember going to the beach and going under the wave and hoping that I will come out on the other side and there will be another world, you know, where there was love, there was laughter, there was joy, and people understood one another, people helped one another. But I will come out on the other side, and there was nothing. I had a lot of belt marks on my skin and open wounds, and the salt water hurts, and I will come out and nothing. Today, because of the program and all of you, I feel that I have come out on the other side, and I have found all of you. Thank you so much for my life. God bless you.